10 years ago, much of Australia's southern coastline was teeming with thick forests of kelp. Part of the Tasmanian coastal forests were so dense, some fishers recalled having to carve channels through the giant kelp or being able to anchor their boats just by tying off on it. The 30-metre-high kelp protected a vibrant ecosystem that provided a food source for many species, as well as protecting shorelines from coastal erosion. Today, it more closely resembles a barren wasteland, with parts of the ocean even being described as an asphalt driveway. Michael Barron, a dive instructor and trained biologist, has watched the kelp forests disappear before his eyes.
Every bay had a kelp forest, but it's been diminishing rapidly in the last 20 years, and now we do not have any forest at all in any of those places. It's very depressing in many ways. People say, oh, well, that's just natural change and all that, but it's not natural. That's the problem. It's not natural. It's been man-induced.
Professor Craig Johnson is a marine community ecologist at the Institute for Marine and Antarctic Studies and has been working on a project to try and restore the kelp beds.
There's two main mechanisms that have caused a reduction of kelps in Tasmania, and they're both related to climate change and driven by warming water. The mechanism for the warming water is a change in behaviour of East Australian current. So what we see there is higher salinity, higher temperature and lower nutrient, very low levels of nitrate. So certainly the temperature and the nitrate signal is very bad for seaweeds. 95% loss of those giant kelps has largely been driven by that warming water.
Aside from warming ocean temperatures, the kelp forests face another threat. An invasive sea urchin is speeding up the loss of the kelp.
So it's a native species of New South Wales. Historically, it wasn't in Tasmania. It was too cold for it here. So with that change in the East Australian current, it makes the water warmer down here. The urchin can survive. But it also transports the larvae down from New South Wales.
The urchins will eat through the thick kelp beds, leaving nothing but barrens.
12 degrees is a real triggering point for the larvae. If the larvae, when they're released in August, September, the coldest time of the year, if the larvae are released and the temperature remains at 12 degrees or more, the larvae survive.
As you can see, the warming waters and change in the East Australian currents have significantly affected the kelp.
The federal government in 2012 declared the Tasmania's giant kelp forests as the country's first critically endangered habitat under EPBC, Environment Protection Biodiversity and Conservation Law. So it was the first habitat in the country declared critically endangered.
That's Pete Wish-Wilson, Tasmanian Senator representing the Australian Greens. While that 2012 declaration meant the forests would be actively protected, it wouldn't slow the effects of climate change. So better media attention and a higher place on the political agenda is what regeneration and survival of the kelp forests is relying on.
I think if there was a general awareness in the population, the same level of awareness that would happen if we did this on land with bulldozers, I think the general community would just jump up and down about it and demand that the politicians do something.
As a politician, I've been trying to get people to understand the impacts that burning fossil fuels has had on our oceans through ocean warming and ocean acidification for many years.
The way in which we communicate climate change and its effects need to be improved. This shouldn't just come from scientists and politicians, but multiple different media outlets, such as news and social media.
Every news report you see has talks about GDP and share prices. You know, we think we live in an economy, but we actually live in an environment and in a planet with air and water. And I wish we would have daily reports about, you know, here's what we are doing to help the environment and to help address climate change. You know, what's the progress on climate change?
That's Greta Pretzel. She's a professor of climate change at University of Tasmania and director of the Centre for Marine Ecology. She was also the marine lead author for the latest IPCC report, Chapter 11.
Climate change means that there's winners and losers. And so we need to be thinking about who has agency and power and whose voices aren't being heard and who gets to decide whose voices are at the table, and all those sorts of things are really critical parts of the discussion around both adaptation and mitigation.
While science is crucial in finding climate change solutions, there is a gap between science and communication with the public. To bridge this gap, as Pete suggests, there's a need for better communicating the science so that more people can understand.
Scientists as a group, as a collective, have to get better at messaging what they do and the importance of what they do.
In response to this, Greta launched REDMAP in 2009. REDMAP, or Range Extension Database Mapping Project, allows citizen scientists to report sightings of species that are usually uncommon to their local environment. This helps to map trends related to warming oceans whilst communicating messages about climate change.
Conversations about climate change are always much more powerful if it can be a form of dialogue and discussion and listening. And I really do see that REDMAP, in a way, is about listening to what fishers and divers are seeing and acknowledging their contributions. And I think that's a much stronger point to start these discussions about climate change. Science is only ever part of the consideration and the information, and data doesn't make decisions, people make decisions.
So citizen science is great for a number of reasons, and there are plenty of ways that we can widen the discussion about what's happening with the Tasmanian kelp forests and climate change in general.
There's a whole range of different things that people can get involved in talking about these kinds of problems and challenges, and trying to read and learn and access information from reliable sources is obviously a good one. And not being afraid to ask questions.
Less than 10% of Tasmania's kelp forest remained in 2011 as a result of warming ocean temperatures. But there is still hope. Experts such as Craig and Michael have started studying how we can replant these kelp beds. They have even begun to do so in some parts of the Tasmanian coastline.
I would not be surprised if we have 12 months from now, all being equal, an area that is actually worthwhile swimming through, so to speak.
I'm optimistic that at some level there are solutions to both urchin barrens and the giant kelp problem. I mean, look, I wouldn't be talking to you about this if I wasn't optimistic that we could do something about it. We've got enough science now to suggest that there's good reason for that optimism.